We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, folks, it is a Wednesday edition of College Sports Now. As always, we bring in our man, Wayne Cook, former UCLA quarterback, gunslinger. Now he's doing his thing with the UCLA Radio Network. He's on the sidelines, and he will be back in the office on Saturday night for Fresno State at UCLA. We'll talk about that game a little bit later. We got Phil Steele dropping by for his usual run-through of all the games in the top 25. We got Michael Serber, a.k.a. El Serberino, kicking it
pronounce
with us
it
as well. Yes, I apologize.
You.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you show the proper respect. I appreciate it.
No, I want to get the handle going. I mean, Serber's Twitter following is through the roof these days.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. This guy's a rock star. So,
it's just like a comedian. Say a couple swear words and people love you.
@L_Serberino. No, Serber,
shots across the bow
just
from the
low bearing feud. Hey. Just throw out an F bomb right in the middle of the show.
Oh, man.
Say some things that are a little inappropriate, and the kids eat it up. They just eat it up.
I watch my mouth. I'm sorry.
Speaking of foul mouthed comedians, R.I.P. to Norm MacDonald.
Norm.
Yeah, that was sad on Tuesday, man.
Did you know that he had cancer?
No one knew.
Yeah.
No, what's
private.
Crazy is you guys, honestly, and I'm not just making this up, like, he's always been someone I didn't know everybody else. I've always thought he was hilarious. His dry sense of humor just makes me laugh so hard. I've been watching clips all day of just old routines of his. I just think that guy was freaking hilarious. So, yeah, so sad.
Yeah, he was phenomenal on SNL. He was the Weekend Update guy for me. I mean, they still do Weekend Update, but for me growing up, he was the guy, and that was when SNL was amazing. I mean, and he was great. Yeah, like movies like Dirty Work. I mean, just raunchy comedies, man.
Man,
he was phenomenal.
Dirty Work is the first, like, raunchy movie I ever saw. Like, I don't know how I was allowed to watch it when I was, like, 10, but I snuck it in somehow, and, like, Norm MacDonald and Artie Lang opened up a world to me of perverse, disgusting humor that really probably is the reason why I'm the degenerate that produces this podcast now.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, Chris Farley was
very
in that
sad.
Movie as well, which is, I mean, you know, he's no longer with us as well. So RIP to Norm MacDonald. That was some sad news coming through the line on Tuesday afternoon. Speaking of sad news, I'm going to try to make this transition to somebody losing their job in the college football community. But that's the sound of. Is that the sound of a car screech? Is that a record screech? Scratch?
Yeah. Or
okay,
like a car swerving into the next lane.
Yeah, Clay Helton, he gone. Southern Cal is looking for a new head coach, and it's, you know, what is it? Is it the best job? Is it the third best job? Is it the fifth best job in all of college football? Who cares? It's open. And Wayne, the timing of you being on to talk about this is great because you've been saying for, years, really, that, hey, guys, like Southern Cal, they're not where they should be. Like Clay Helton, great right. guy, phenomenal person. Like does great interviews, is gracious with his time. He's been on the show before. He gave me 25 minutes in the middle of the summer. He had no business doing that. And I remember we talked about fishing. I mean, he's a great guy. Wasn't getting the wins and the Stanford game, Wayne. I mean, buddy, that thing on Saturday night, this was a Stanford team that put up 7 points in a loss to Kansas State week one. And I know they made a quarterback change, but they beat the life out of Southern Cal at the Coliseum, okay? Trojans scored two fourth-quarter touchdowns in, like, the final 6 minutes. But that thing was, like, 42-13 or something. Yeah, I mean, it was out of control.
It was old-school Stanford. And don't just say, yeah, they found a new quarterback. I actually think they found their quarterback. I think Tanner McKee has a chance to be really, really good.
This guy's right up your alley, right? I mean, 6'6", 230.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
your kind of guy.
Well, we're going to get into the Helton stuff, but I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Like, I know that people that listen to this show on a regular basis probably think that I only like quarterbacks like myself, like, you know, tall, drop back,
handsome,
you know, go through your progressions, you know, good looking. Yeah. read the
great feet.
Yeah. You know,
tremendous.
No,
feet.
Yeah. Great feet. Got to have great feet. If you let your belly hang out, you know, you got to make sure you're looking good like Baker Mayfield. But no, the point that I think that people, if you've listened to me over time, I like people with really good arm talent that want to throw the ball first. They have good feet. They have good arm talent. They want to throw the ball. But if you can run also and you're athletic, then it's kind of like game on. Like, you know, like the Russell Wilsons of the world. Or right now, Kyler Murray, he looks like he has a chance to be really good too. The way he throws, you know, he's a baseball player. He's got great arm talent, but he can also take off and beat you with his legs. I'm more concerned in the long run, and I know people get mad when I say stuff like this, but I just think Lamar Jackson has too many limitations throwing the football. It drives people crazy. I'm like, he's as good a runner as there is, but I would rather have him be less of a good runner and a better passer because I think that matters more in the long run. That's just my opinion. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. I'm just saying sometimes in college you get away with, you know, if you're, you know, De'Aaron King and you can run around and make some plays, that's great. But again, when you play really good defenses, you're going to have to be able to throw. And I just think that's really, really important. Anyway, I think – I know it's only one game, and I remember when Mertz from – is that right? From Wisconsin? When he played his first game, I was like, oh, my God, this guy's going to be amazing. And he hasn't been as good since then. So he may end up being, but we'll see. So we'll see what Tanner McKee does. But anyway, that being said, another firing kind of at a weird time right at the beginning of season. SC was a ranked team. You know, people had high hopes. A lot of people picked USC to win the South. And believe it or not, they still can. It's not like they can't. Yes, they lost a conference game, but they get to play everybody in the South, and they still have tons of talent. If you haven't watched Drake London play at receiver, he's as good as there is in the country. I mean, the guy can have games where he catches 15 balls. He's incredible. So, SC, but here's the deal. If you're going to be a head coach in college football, and you're going to be a good guy and a player's coach, you better have that voice that everybody perks up when you use it. You better have that ability to say, hey, we need to all shape up right now and get our heads in the game because this sucks. Or everybody on the line right now, we're running. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And I think from what I've seen, and again, SC fans, I promise I'm not trying to pick on you, but just last year, after, and shoot, I can't talk a lot of smack. USC lost at the very last seconds of the game to USC last year. But what I saw afterwards from some of their players and some of the things they were doing towards the UCLA fans and the UCLA players that were inappropriate, to me, that's a program with a nice coach who doesn't have the discipline that it takes. Because I've been around. I've watched Clemson up close and personal. I've watched Alabama up close and personal. I've watched the way their players are with the media. I watch how they act after games, and they don't do that. SC had a control problem. They wanted a coach that was a good image because they were dealing with some stuff off the field. And they got that. But what they got also was a bunch of players who I don't think had the discipline and had a coach that required them to do what was right. When your superstars are doing inappropriate things like that after games, it shows. And that's why you get inconsistent play and inconsistent effort. Every great coach will tell you, you know, Nick Saban's always the great example. And for all the people that think I'm always picking on Alabama, Nick Saban's the greatest coach that's ever lived. And he's got this great talent, and he has a way of making them unbelievably disciplined. And you rarely see them doing things that you would go, why is that player showboating? Or why is that, did that player just flip somebody off when they scored a touchdown? Like, stuff that we've seen over the years, you don't see that from Alabama, because those players know that Nick Saban, I don't care who they are, he'll take their butt out of the game and he'll put another five-star athlete in right after him. And I think that that's probably was the downfall of Clay Helton. And I also think that going to the spread and trying to be like Texas Tech or Washington State or whoever, instead of being USC and kicking people's butt up front on offense and defense and being able to run the ball, doesn't mean you can't throw the ball 35 times a game. But the fact that they kind of went to that style of offense, it to me is mind-boggling. It's just not what USC should be doing. Now, I will say one more thing. I do think USC is guilty of what UCLA was guilty of when it came to basketball. They kept saying, well, Coach Wooden, well, Coach Wooden, well, Coach Wooden. Well, this isn't the John McKay USC teams anymore.
Right.
Players can go anywhere they want in the country to play football. USC isn't in the greatest part of Los Angeles. Like, they have to be good. They have to recruit the right way. They have to try to keep players home. And it's not like it was 30, 40 years ago. It's just not. And so, you know, Pete Carroll hit lightning in a bottle at the right time, and they had a great decade. But in reality, the 90s weren't great for them. And neither has the time after Pete Carroll. I think they've been to one Rose Bowl with Sam Darnold. So they've got to kind of forget about, like, sometimes you have to kind of say, you know what, the past was great, but we've got to play football in the modern era and kind of, like, understand that the past is awesome, but we have to move forward. And I think that's what they need to do with this next hire.
So the Clay Helton era comes to an end after 7 years. And Wayne, you're right. I mean, there's a generation of guys. I mean, we're all older. Like,
right.
You know, me, you, Serber, like, we remember like Leinart and Bush and Pete Carroll. And I mean, it wasn't just the guys on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, Troy Polamalu, I mean, yeah. Brian Cushing, I mean, just dudes.
Yeah.
So there's a generation of like elite five-star high school kids that are like, they don't remember Southern Cal running the Pac-12. Like, it's been Oregon, or maybe 1 year it's Washington, or, you know, maybe one year it's Utah.
Stanford with McCaffrey and those guys. Yeah.
So I'm with you. I mean, it's a program that has been underachieving by their standards, which are, you know, incredibly lofty. So here's my question for you, because you bring a unique perspective to this. Obviously, you're a UCLA guy. You live in Southern Cal. You know that when, you know, the Trojans are rolling, I mean, that's LA's, what, probably second or maybe third favorite team behind the Lakers and the Dodgers? I mean, they run that town. No disrespect. No disrespect. But here's my question. You're the Southern Cal athletic director. Where are you going? Like, who are you calling, Wayne? Because, again, like, we did this with Texas last year. Top five job. Slam dunk job. You get, you know, there's no excuse why you can't compete. You've got all the resources, you got all the money, recruiting in your backyard, all of it. It's there. So, like, if you're the athletic director, who you calling, Wayne? Who's your guy?
So let's back up a little bit first. Please, everybody needs to understand this. Whatever you say about LA and how there's too many teams, that's nonsense. When you're winning in LA, people show up. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, because there's 13 million people there, and Wayne. There are too many damn teams.
We have so many people. Like, again, you guys all know, like, we have 40 million people in California. Okay, we're huge. Okay. So my point is that you can go to Dodger games, you can go to UCLA games, you can go to SC games, you can go to Laker games. Trust me, there's enough people to fill if you're good. I mean, even when the Clippers are winning, people show up. When they're not winning, people don't show up. So USC also has – you have to understand this too. Sometimes it just takes one good year. See, people act like if you're a struggling program and you end up being a top five team or making it to the playoff, trust me, every one of those high school kids sees that, and that recruiting class could end up being good. And then if you win 2 years in a row, you're off and running. Now you've got a program that's going in the right direction, and you have depth, and you're recruiting every year, and it could change like that. Trust me, UCLA, I don't know how they've done it off of these losing seasons, but it's bringing in elite players who have transferred and wanted to come home to California, and they're good, like really good, like Alabama players and Texas A&M players and Notre Dame players. And like, these guys are coming home, and they're balling out, and it's fun to watch. And then when you start winning and people see all these people, like running backs like Zach Charbonnet, who was at Michigan at one point, that's running for a million yards and averaging like 11 or 12 yards a carry against an SEC defense. I mean, it's like you see that, and then every high school kid's going, okay, UCLA is already the number one school in America, the number one public school academically. Now they've got a good football team, and their basketball team was in a Final Four. I'm in. It doesn't take that long. It really doesn't. So if SC wants to be good, and they could still end up having a good year, they could win a lot of games with an interim coach. I don't know how many. They're not going to be able to get a coach right now. It's kind of a weird time. Anyway, long story, to get back to what you asked me, which you know I always do this. You're like, you probably don't even remember what you asked me. Who do they go after? Their AD, Bone, was at Cincinnati.
Yes.
I personally think that Luke Fickell would be an amazing coach for them, because he's exactly what they need. He's not the most glitz and glamour. He's a good name. But remember, you guys, Pete Carroll was like down the list when he was hired by USC. He wasn't the number one choice. It wasn't like he was coming off a stellar NFL career. And he ended up being perfect. Absolutely perfect. I just feel like Fickell would bring discipline. He would bring a toughness. He would he's as good a football coach as there is out there. Just look at what he's done with Cincinnati. That being said, he might not want to come. Cincinnati's about to join the Big 12.
Yes.
Which, by the way, pretty cool that the Big 12 has a chance to add some pretty good programs.
Yeah, it's going to make a heck of a basketball conference, man.
No. I know you're an elitist, and I know you're that jerk that thinks that this is no big deal, but BYU is a quality program. Cincinnati's a quality program. Houston can be. And what was the other one again? UCF. They can help. Not everybody's going to be able to just go, which, by the way, Texas is looking like such a great acquisition right now. Yeah, good for you. Arkansas is like, how many people pick Arkansas to win anything in the SEC this year?
I did. I did last week on this show.
And
you're welcome.
They have one game, but Tusk. Where do you think they're going to finish in the SEC?
Probably fifth in the West.
They just dominate, and they just dominated Texas. Whatever. My point is I think that would be a good hire. I think that they're going to go after a big name, and because it's SC, you'll hear every big name. But they need to be really smart about going after a really good football coach. Like remember how hot PJ Fleck was a few years ago?
Oh God!
I know his stock has gone way down.
What if he's rowing the boat in LA, Wayne? What do you think, buddy?
Boat. I don't know if he fits out here. But my point is I still think players, like every coach in America, realizes when you go to some of these programs that aren't like elite type blue bloods that put every resource into their football program, it makes it really difficult. Someone pointed out today on something I was watching, said something about Brian Kelly, which I thought was kind of funny. No self-respecting Notre Dame coach would ever go to SC. I could never see that happening. But Brian Kelly's a really good coach. But someone pointed out something that, and this is not me trying to insult USC, but Notre Dame deals with what Michigan deals with. It deals with what UCLA deals with. It deals with what Northwestern deals with. Actual academic standards to get into school.
Sure.
Like a lot of athletes, and I've heard this a lot from UCLA, but also other academic institutions, they can't recruit certain kids. They can't even try. It's not even close. Like I know Chip Kelly, there's certain things that he just says, I can't recruit you. You could call him, say, I want to come to your school. And if you don't have the academic side of it, he won't even try. Right. That's why sometimes you see, how people post their lists of like, these are the schools that want me, and they put them all up there, and you don't see a Notre Dame or a UCLA or a Michigan or a Northwestern, or, you know, and I know there's a lot of great academic schools out there, but they're just not on those lists. And it's not that those kids are bad kids. They're just not good enough students to get into those schools. So when you recruit at these academic schools like Notre Dame, for example, you might be able to get some kids into USC as a private institution that you can't get at Notre Dame. So maybe that's appealing. I could never see that happening, though. I mean, it'd be like you'd get death threats for the rest of your life if you left Notre Dame to coach at USC. That just, I just can't even imagine. That'd be like a terrible move. But that's the type of person that I think is a really good coach, though, that could win at a place like USC.
Serber, the window has closed on the Arkansas Sound. I promise we will play it in the pick segment, okay? Because I do need to remind you guys that you picked against Arkansas.
Serber.
And, oh, by the way, Wayne went 0-3 in the picks last week. So,
so did Serber.
No, Serber got one of them right. I put it in my notes.
Did you guys, and how many did you get right?
I went 1-2. I mean, I didn't have a great week, but
whatever.
Well, we'll get to the picks. We'll get to the pick segment a little bit later. Hang on a second. Now I've lost my notes here. I'm lost without them.
Notes. Who needs notes? Just say a topic and let me talk. Come on.
Well, okay. So
I have stuff. You know what, dude? I have a page.
I know you
do. I have 2 pages of every conference and what's going on. That's crazy. So if you need me, just let me know.
Wayne, of course I need you. You're co-hosting the show, buddy. I always need you.
let's go through some of this stuff, unless you got something you want to ask.
Well, here was my question. If I said, Wayne, you're the athletic director, you're Mike Bone. You're Colin Fickell. You think that's the guy?
I think that would be, first, because I have a relationship with him. I have trust with him. It just seems like the obvious choice. My problem is that I don't think USC, and I go back and think about Sarkisian and Lane Kiffin and the firing on the tarmac and like the Ed Orgeron and the one game and, you know, all the misses that have happened. You know, really, of all of this, Clay Helton's been the most successful, you guys. So it's tricky to me. And so I don't think that it's just this easy fix. So I think I would like to see a disciplinarian. I would like to see someone that could come in and wants to pound the ball, that's going to recruit offensive linemen and running backs. Doesn't mean you can't throw the ball and have a good quarterback. You don't want to lose the elite talent at receiver. You can still do that. But there has to be a little bit more balance. And don't forget, the elite. I say this about Oregon when they were good with Chip Kelly, and I say this about SC when they were good with Pete Carroll. Go back and Google who were on those defenses. They could play defense. Those teams are nasty up front. And so you win in the trenches. The reason why UCLA's football team is doing well right now and whooped up on LSU isn't because they have better talent at every skill position. I'm not saying they don't. I think they have equivalent talent. But it's because they were better up front. And the more I watch football, I'm bullish on Michigan right now. And I've watched Ohio State play, and I've watched Michigan play. I've seen Wisconsin look eh. I think right now, doesn't it look like Michigan and Penn State could be the cream of the crop in the Big Ten?
No.
Why not?
Get Michigan cream of the crop and in the Big Ten out of your mouth, Wayne. Come on.
Why?
Do not drink that
poison. Look at what those
running
backs are doing.
Look at
they
who they played.
They have a quarterback that can manage. Yeah, but they just played Washington.
Washington's not good at football, Wayne.
Okay. Well, like you said, it's early in the year. It is early in the year. It really
Washington
is.
Has the worst offense I have seen in a long
bad.
Time.
Hey, remember last week when I said this, and again, this is really important too. Replacing Chris Peterson is not easy.
Okay.
He's
stop
a
right
Hall
there.
Of Fame coach.
Stop right there.
Hall of Fame coach.
Chris Peterson is a candidate for this Southern Cal job.
He is, but no, doesn't
why,
fit
why?
Him either.
Why not?
Because he got out of coaching. Because it became too all-consuming.
Correct.
I think that if you go to USC and you lose a game or two, whether or not the fans are realistic or not, and again, I know this because I've watched UCLA basketball over the years. You know, people expect, you know, 11 national championships. They don't expect, you know, Final Fours aren't enough. Ben Howland was a great coach at UCLA. We went to three Final Fours and 2 national championship games and just ran into great
Yeah, lost
Florida
them all.
Teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but that wasn't enough. That was sorry, but that's not enough. You got to go. We're bringing someone else. So if you're going to take on that USC football job, you need to know that it's going to be all consuming. You can't be Chris Peterson at Boise State. You know what I mean? And I think that that's the problem. So I think the dude's awesome. I have so much respect for him. He's one of my favorite coaches. I think as a human being and as a coach, I think he's amazing. But the pressure got to him a little bit. I'm not saying the pressure got to him. That's not my point. But even at Washington, remember how good they were offensively? And then it kind of tailored off, and it was a little bit more of a struggle towards the end of his tenure. But they were still winning a ton of games. They were still putting a ton of guys into the NFL on those defenses that were really, really good.
And offense, too. I mean, they had first-round guys on offense, too. Yeah.
Chris Peterson's not easy to replace. He's that good of a coach. He was, in my opinion, for when he was at Washington, at Boise State, he was a top-five coach. That's how good he was.
Well, that's my question, man. Like, don't you think that he is one of the best coaches who doesn't have a job right now?
But I don't think SC's a fit for what the reason why he got away from it. Now you're starting to hear rumors, by the way, that have been kind of fun. That Chris Peterson, you know, he's working in the studio now that he's already kind of wants to get back. You're starting to hear rumors about how things aren't going well for Urban Meyer at Jacksonville, and maybe he's looking to get back into college already after one game. So people are going to start throwing around stuff, and you know how the internet works, like what's true and what's not true. But there's got to be someone, and maybe, just maybe, they're thinking maybe we can go out and find another Pete Carroll, someone that is a good coach. Eric Bieniemy is a name that's been thrown around. I would hate to see that because I loved it when Eric Bieniemy was at.
I mean, that makes sense, okay?
No, it does.
I mean, but the guy's never coached before. Like,
that's my point.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, I mean, they as great of a mind. Because remember, you guys, and I love Eric Bieniemy. He was at UCLA when Maurice Jones-Drew was here. And, you know, they had a great 10-win season, and a lot of guys left that staff and went on to the NFL and other coaching jobs. But I thought Bieniemy was amazing. He's a great recruiter. He's a good guy. He's got a great offensive mind. Obviously, being a head coach is a different deal, but we all have to remember before we lose our minds, Eric Bieniemy has, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the world.
That helps.
And Patrick Mahomes. And he also has been tutored by Andy Reid.
That helps.
Who, last time I checked, has always been a great offensive mind.
But see,
he had Donovan McNabb on the brink of Super Bowls many times.
Yes. Here's where this is fun for me, Wayne, and you touched on it with the rumor mill and stuff. You know, top five college football jobs don't come open every day. That's all. So, Texas, yeah, it's been filled. First-year head coach, Sark's 1-1. He just got his ass kicked in Fayetteville. Tusk was riding around on the flatbed, and they couldn't handle it. So, Ohio State, found a guy. It's working. Oklahoma, found a guy. It's working. Bama, well, there's no need to find a guy because Saban just signed another extension. He'll be there until he dies. But
it was 102.
Yeah, I mean, and it'll still be winning 12 games coaching. A year.
Yep.
Here's the thing about Southern Cal, though, and again, it goes back to the point. Roll Tide. The point I was making earlier, man, there's 20-year-old kids who don't remember Southern Cal flexing on college football. So you've got a chance to get this right, and if you do, it's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to be great for your league, Wayne. It's going to be great for college football if there is a perennial West Coast power. So, not a flash in the pan. I'm talking about like a power, man.
So slow down for a second. So this is where we get like the Texas and the USC being a top five job. Maybe the money they can put in their program, but in reality, I mean, Texas 2005 when they beat USC, which, by the way, I was at that game in person. That game was a long time ago. Like Vince Young is like kind of he's an older guy like us now. You know, that was a long time ago. And if you really start looking at some of these programs and you start thinking, like, you know, when was the last time they won a national champion? Even Michigan. I love Michigan. Michigan won with our man John Jansen. But other than that, national championships? No.
Because they're hiring the wrong guys. That's my point.
Well, you think, but yet the right guy seems to be Nick Saban.
No.
And Dabo Sweeney. Those seem to be the right guys. And then we don't know about Jason Day yet. Maybe this is the beginning of him starting to lose what Urban Meyer set up. Because that can't happen, right?
Sure.
Like you kind of win.
Yeah, Larry, I watched that. The old Larry Coker syndrome. Yeah.
When Terry Donahue left UCLA, Okay, they had been to 5 Rose Bowls in his 20 years. Okay, well, 4. But when he left, he had Cade McNown at quarterback. This was and a lot of his recruits ended up being one game away against Miami, the Hurricane game that was rescheduled to play in the first BCS National Championship game. That was where Donahue's guys. Toledo was a good coach for a little while, and then it kind of tinkered off because now he had to deal with now his own recruiting classes. And it got, and I'm not saying we didn't have some good teams. It just wasn't the same. That can happen. Like, you may see that happen. I mean, Ohio State's a pretty great football program, so I imagine they're always going to be good. But it might not be Urban Meyer good. It might not be. So, you know, we'll see. You know, Lincoln Riley's done a great job, you know, replacing Stoops. Like, he's really kind of maintained the course. But they won a national championship with Stoops, correct?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure they haven't won a national championship yet.
One national championship was Stoops.
One, but well, you act like one's not enough. See, again, you're basing everything on what Saban's done.
I'm just stating facts. I'm just stating facts.
There's
my point.
Two schools out of 130 that have won more than one in like the last 20 years. LSU may have won a couple, but you know what I mean. It's not very many schools.
Ohio State, Clemson, LSU, Bama. That's it.
The same teams we always talk about. But see, my point is that you can be really good at something. So my argument here is you threw in Texas and SC like they were, they're top 5 schools. Well, based on what? 50 years ago?
Based on resources,
couple
recruiting,
of good years,
and money.
Couple of good, yeah, based on – but recruiting, do you think that stars ever change when guys sign with certain schools?
Wayne, all I'm saying is Southern Cal and Texas. Hang
question.
On a second. No, I don't. I mean, to an
you
extent.
You don't think so. Now, the extent, Alabama guys are good. I get it. But do you think that sometimes when players pick certain schools that it just makes them, like, their start, I see them change.
I'm talking about having a recruiting profile where you can field, you can fill out your depth chart and not have to go outside of 200 miles of your campus.
Where is Texas on the 4 and 5 stars compared to Alabama and Clemson?
You're talking about Texas the school or Texas the state?
No. Texas the Longhorns. Where are they at in 4 and 5 stars compared to those other two schools?
I mean, they're looking up, but my point is you have in-state research. You have elite high school talent every year. You have a pipeline in your backyard. Same with Southern Cal.
So does California.
Yeah, absolutely. But Southern Cal has been whiffing with hires. Texas has been whiffing with hires. Florida State, Michigan. Not even close on some of these hires.
Who's the hire then? Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney?
I don't know.
Or bringing back Stoops or Urban Meyer? Remember what happened when people tried to come back? Oh, we're going to hire Les Miles. He won a national championship.
That's a
whiff.
We're going to
hire Mack Brown. And he's going to bring in that. Now, Mack Brown's done a great job in North Carolina, but do you actually think North Carolina in the foreseeable future will ever win a national championship?
No. No, I don't.
Probably not. But does that mean that he failed?
No, but he's not at a top 5 elite job in college football.
I get what you're saying, but then who's the hire?
I don't know. That's the fun part.
It's Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney.
No, I mean, that's my point. That's what Mike Bone has to think about. I mean, he gets paid a very nice salary to try to figure out, hey, man, I've got to fix this. Who's going to be the guy? Who's going to be the kingmaker?
Like Tom Herman. People wanted him.
Whiff. I mean, Brady Hoke at Michigan, Rich Rodriguez. I mean, Willie Taggart.
Bo Pelini,
there have been some whiffs.
Right. So here, Bo Pelini was a great choice. The idea here, you guys, and I think this is what gets really, really tricky, and you guys can both chime in and tell me what you think. Alabama is the perfect storm. And I know that Nick Saban won at LSU too, but when you can be an elite coach at a program with unlimited resources, the ability to recruit pretty much every athlete that qualifies, remember what we were talking about earlier about academics, disqualifying and getting into a school are two different things.
Yes.
It's almost like certain schools, it kind of everything is there for you to succeed. If you took, I'll give you an example. PJ Fleck was a hot coach and he went to Minnesota. How do you think that Nick Saban would have done at Minnesota in the same amount of time that he's been at Alabama?
I hesitate to agree with you on the PJ Fleck was a hot coach bit. The guy won 12 games at Western Michigan.
Pick another coach.
He was red.
Pick another coach from a middle of the road school. Any of them. Indiana.
Matt Campbell is a great one, I would say.
Campbell is the current day one. Yeah, I'll give you that. That's a good call, Serbs.
Okay, so go to Iowa State. Yeah, what do you think that – I'm just saying, my point to you, whether it was P.J. Fleck or not, is take Coach Saban and put him back at Michigan State. Put him at Indiana. Put him at Cal Berkeley. Put him at whatever. And I still think he's a great coach. He would not have the national championships, and he would not have the same number of wins that he has at Alabama because of the situation that he's in. Not belittling how much. It's kind of like saying that John Wooden, if he wouldn't have been coaching at UCLA at the time, that it wasn't like the perfect storm and the way things happen. If he'd have been at a smaller school or a different type of school somewhere else, it may not have worked out as well. Well, that's what makes it so complicated.
Okay. But that's also why this hire at Southern Cal, if done correctly, could potentially good, yeah. tip the balances of college football. Like it's that type of job.
In its current environment, do you think that USC, where it's located and everything that goes along with that program, is equivalent or close to some of the teams that have won, like Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, some of these schools that have recently won, Clemson? Do you think that, right? Because they probably do, right? They're probably, if you get the right Pete Carroll magic, and again, Pete Carroll was not a big name at the time, and you get the right players in, that it could end up being another decade of excellence.
I mean, look, I'm sure there are nicer facilities. I've never been to the Coliseum.
No, it's beautiful campus.
I've heard that it's, you know, in the hood. I've heard that the John McKay Center is very nice, right? Like their new football facility. Like I've heard that it's very nice. Is it nicer than LSU's locker rooms? Is it nicer than that water park that Clemson has with the lazy river and the paw-shaped pool? Like, I don't know. Probably not. But it is a brand. Like, and it is LA. Yeah. It's the number two media market in the country. And especially, I mean, we haven't even talked about the NIL part of all this. I mean, my God, if Bryce Young is pulling in $1.5 million to be the quarterback at Tuscaloosa, can you imagine if Matt Leinart in NIL territory is the quarterback at Southern Cal?
I probably
like, it's a feeding frenzy.
I probably shouldn't say what I'm about to say, but sometimes in these local markets where there's only your football program.
No,
Wouldn't you think it's easier to sell someone?
Sure.
Than there isn't a market where there's like every celebrity, I mean, I shouldn't say this because I'm not trying to like.
I hear you.
UCLA's right next door, but you know what I'm saying?
I hear you, but the market will command a much higher rate in LA than it will in Tuscaloosa.
Like, I don't know. Who do you guys like? So slow down. So yeah, I've been talking way too much. Serber, who do you guys think that if you had a couple of coaches for USC, who would you go after?
I think you gotta put feelers out in the NFL.
Okay,
who's your guy? Who are you calling?
That's the way to go. And
Belichick.
The first person I call is Joe Brady.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't know if he wants to come back.
He's been on some lists.
I don't know if he wants to come back to college football, but if I'm thinking of a young NFL guy, I'm trying to follow the Lincoln Riley model because even though he hasn't won a national championship at Oklahoma, you gotta feel like. I mean, he's got 30 years.
Is Joe Brady even a coordinator for Carolina?
He's on the list. He's on the short list.
Okay.
Yeah. And recently he won a national championship.
Yep. And listen, everybody on that staff is gone. That was on, you know, that national championship staff. And not to take anything away from Joe Burrow and the awesome players that they had, but that's got a lot to do with why LSU is not getting it done. You know,
yeah.
They played a tough UCLA team that was frankly better than them. But like, you can't tell me you feel confident about them going the rest of the way in the SEC West and this being like a productive season for them this year.
Wayne,
it's obvious.
You may laugh at me. That's a good pick. I mean, he's young. Like, it works. I get it. The Lincoln Riley path, you know, he's a magician calling plays. I get it. I'm going to throw out a name, and you'll laugh at me. Both of you guys are going to laugh at me. If you can find a way to make amends, I think Lane Kiffin might be on the short list. I mean, what he's doing at Ole Miss, like, that offense is not, like, that's not a flash-in-the-pan offense. We're talking about some sustained... I don't know, man. Like, what do you want to be? Like, cause if you bring in Luke Fickell, like, you're not going to be hanging 50 on everybody. I don't think he's that guy. Maybe he builds the staff. Like in LA, Wayne, you know this, man, you got to sell the sizzle. Like, you got to have UCLA did this with Chip Kelly and it's finally paying off in year four. But like, you've got to get butts in the seat, man. Like, you've got to get people excited. I don't know if Luke Fickell does that. I understand about the connection to Cincinnati and the former AD who's now calling the shots. I get that, man. He hired Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. This ain't Nippert Stadium, bro. Like, we're not eating Skyline Chili over here. It's different in LA. So I don't know, man. I think it'll be fascinating. I'll tell you what.
I think you need to win, right? So
yeah, just so win, like, baby.
So
let's go.
You're saying that like Luke Fickell, for example, can't get an offensive coordinator that can use the talent that you can acquire at USC properly. I think he's smarter than that. He's
sure.
You know, when you're a head coach, you know, you always have this ability to hire the right people. And if you really think about it, like, Nick Saban's been amazing because everybody that comes in there, he finds a way to fit new coordinators into their system. You've heard this many times. They're not changing their system every time they get a new coordinator. Their new coordinator's coming in and learning their system. Which is why they just keep being good all the time. It'll be interesting, but I don't think that's a bad hire. I mean, Lane Kiffin, the problem is this is a guy that got fired in a very interesting way.
Yeah. I don't think you can make amends.
He has grown up. He's still funny. He's still brash, but he seems a little bit more mature than he did when he was younger, when he just kind of seemed spoiled sometimes. I actually like Lane Kiffin. I think he's funny. And he's doing a great job. But he's also coaching in the SEC right now and has a chance to be pretty good.
Or honestly, like LA, like, I mean, Southern Cal is it's a good institution of higher learning. You know, you find a way to, I don't know, you get a sample from Nick Saban, a lock of hair or maybe like a fleck of skin, I don't know. And then you clone him. And then you put him in you put him in a Trojan polo and you've got, you know, you've got the clone of Nick's. I think they can do that now, right?
Yeah.
Stem cells and stuff.
Yeah, you probably want to send the clone to the AFC East for just a few years, though, just so it's primed and seasoned properly. So I mean, I think you've got the right idea, but there's got to be like a coach in between for that to really pay off.
Got it. Okay, so you stash the stem cells away for a while.
Yeah,
okay.
it's like a draft and stash situation with a European player in the
Got
NBA.
It. Got it.
With the clone, though.
I'll tell you what. Let's hit pause on the Southern Cal coaching talk. I think it's fascinating, man. It's gonna play out in real time over the next couple of weeks. It's an elite job. I think it's fascinating. I can't wait to see who they hire and how that affects everything. But by the way, the UConn job is also open. Let's hit pause on the coaching carousel talk and bring in our man Phil Steele. He joins the show every week. We talk to the Godfather coming up next.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Folks, we do it every Wednesday. We got Wayne Cook, and we call in the Godfather, Phil Steele, author of Phil Steele's College Football Preview Magazine. I still maintain it's not too late. I mean, you will watch football very differently if you go about your business and get yourself a Phil Steele magazine. I think September is kind of the cutoff. I mean, you can find them, but I just, you know, there's still time. So if you don't have one, go get you one. Phil, we have got a loaded dance card for week three. Thank you again for joining us. I got to ask you, man, before we get into these games, how taken aback were you by Oregon, Ohio State over the weekend? I mean, that was awesome to watch. Maybe not if you're an Ohio State fan, but what a performance by the Ducks.
You know, and during the off season, when I was breaking it down on my 200 plus radio shows I do over the summer, I often said that it seems like everybody has everybody coming back this year, right? 15, 16 returning starters, except for the four teams that made the playoff last year. They all have 9, 10, 11 returning starters and all lose their quarterback. So I thought the pack might be getting a little bit closer to the big boys. We saw that they have. And Ohio State's defense in need of some serious repair. You cannot let guys just run free like that. But I tell you what, for those that clamor for new blood in the playoff, they may get it this year.
You know, it's interesting that you said that, Phil, because I've watched Notre Dame play a couple times this year, and I'm not overly impressed. I've watched, you know, some of these teams. You mentioned Ohio State. They didn't look great against Minnesota. You know, shoot, SC, who people thought were going to have a year, got throttled by Stanford. I mean, I think this is a weird year. I think it's interesting. And as you pointed out, there's so many great – like, just pick the quarterbacks. I mean, Clemson scored 3 points in the first game. Well, they don't have Trevor Lawrence anymore. Maybe that makes a difference. I imagine they would have scored a few more points, even though I know Georgia's great. My point is that you nailed it. I mean, there's some of these really good teams that have a lot of players to replace, and it seems like the only team that isn't having too much problems, although we may learn a little bit this week, is Alabama.
Yeah, and it seems like the teams at the top lost all those players to the NFL. Everybody else has everybody returning, and we've seen it go to fruition this year.
All right, let's talk about some games, Phil. I've got the Saturday slate here in front of me. I did want to ask, though, do either one of those games on Friday night do anything for you? UCF laying a touchdown on the road at Louisville, Maryland laying a little more than a touchdown on the road at Illinois.
No, not really. I mean, Illinois looked good in the opener against Nebraska. Last week they had players for Virginia just running free. I mean, they were gaining 25 yards of play in the first half. That's scary going against Maryland, but we may see a different Illinois team. So not wild about that game. And UCF probably laying a few too many points on the road against Louisville for me to get excited about that.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Well, speaking of Big Ten teams that have underperformed, let's go to Saturday at high noon. All right. Cincinnati on the road at Indiana. Bearcats are laying, I think, 3, 3.5, Phil. There's been some movement here. I mean, this is one of those games on Cincinnati's schedule that could really make or break the season. They got to go to South Bend a little bit later. But what do you make of Cincinnati and Indiana at noon?
Yeah, we're going to find out if Cincinnati's a legitimate playoff contender with this one. And then they get a bye and then play Notre Dame. So it's the biggest two-game stretch of the season for them. Indiana's offense has not been overwhelming this year. Last week against Idaho, it was the first time since 1969 they had two punt returns for touchdowns. They only had 338 yards in the opener against Iowa, only 233. But they are at home. They are a legitimate squad defensively. I think it'll be a lower-scoring game. Cincinnati right now is laying 4. I think that might be a little bit heavy. I had Cincinnati by 3 in the game. I think it's going to be a great game to watch. So far, Cincinnati's been more impressive, but, of course, they've only played Miami of Ohio and Murray. Meanwhile, Indiana opened up against Iowa. So I think it's going to be a really good game, come right down to the wire. I would lean with the home dog, but I think Cincinnati comes out with the win.
I'm only going to ask you about the Texas A&M game versus New Mexico because of last week. They lose their quarterback. They were in a dogfight and losing for most of the game against Colorado and Denver. That was an interesting game to watch for such a low-scoring game. I actually thought Colorado was a little bit conservative and didn't take advantage of some opportunities. Are you worried about Texas A&M? What do you know about their backup quarterback? Do you expect them to bounce back? I mean, obviously their defense is really good.
Yeah, Calzada's a guy that was in competition with King all August. I really thought Haynes King was a better quarterback, more mobility to the position, a better overall quarterback. We saw Calzada get better as the game went on. And remember, they really scored 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Calzada scored the touchdown but fumbled into the end zone, so they had to come back down and do it again. And I think New Mexico is a much easier test than is Colorado. They're at home. Jimbo Fisher's talking about improvement. I think we'll see it this week. So I still think the Aggies have a chance against Bama, but I would have thought they had a better chance with Haynes King at quarterback.
Right.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Phil, I've got another nooner for you. Virginia Tech, ranked number 15, undefeated at West Virginia, and they're an underdog. Well, what do you make of this one? Do you agree with the line? Mountaineers favored in Morgantown by 3.
Yeah, I like West Virginia in this one. The Mountaineers in the opener sort of laid an egg against Maryland. They came up short on the scoreboard and came up short statistically. They got outgained 496 to 325. But I thought coming into the season, they were probably the better team. Virginia Tech at home on a Friday night is almost unbeatable. Enter Sandman, that crowd, it's phenomenal. But now West Virginia's got the crowd advantage here. And I do think they're the slightly better team overall. So I like West Virginia to win this one more than the 3 points at home. I like a bounce back for the Mountaineers.
I have been underwhelmed by Miami so far. Michigan State's a team no one's talking about. Miami, to me, has not looked good. I know they've played difficult opponents, I guess. But I'm just not sure. I actually think this is a really interesting game, Michigan State and Miami. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, and this one, I am going to think we see the Miami we thought we were going to see this year. I mean, in the opener, they played Alabama, and they got smushed, and as most teams do against Alabama in the opening game of the season. Last week may have been a bit of a letdown situation, playing App State, a very good App State team, one of the best teams in the Sun Belt, a legitimate ranked team, and they came out with the win. It was close. But now I think we'll see the best Miami team we've seen all season. And for Michigan State, they were very impressive in the opener. Kenneth Walker is averaging 10.7 yards per carry this year. Phenomenal. Peyton Thorne last week and overall for the season, hitting 65%, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. But they're going to the heat of Miami. And remember last year, Michigan opened up the season, and didn't they look great against Minnesota in that opening game? And then it didn't pan out the rest of the year. I'm still not completely sold on Michigan State quite yet. I do think Miami needs this game badly, and they're laying less than a touchdown. Had this game been played prior to the start of the season, Miami would be laying probably 17 points in this game. So I think we got a lot of value, and I think we're going to see the Miami of Florida team we thought we'd see this year.
Yeah, interesting. All about values. Hey, I'm curious, Phil, speaking of teams and it's tough to get a read on, talk to me about the Irish, man. I mean, yes, they're 2-0, but boy, I mean, it's been an adventure to get here, and you know, some questionable clock management from Toledo. I mean, the Rockets maybe should have won that game last Saturday if they had managed the clock a little bit differently. Purdue comes to South Bend. Notre Dame's favored by 7.5. Phil.
Yeah, and I like the Irish to come out of here with the win. I think last week they were playing on a short week coming off that big Florida State game.
Yeah.
An emotional game, playing before the home crowd. Now you're a big favorite at home against an underrated Toledo team, one that very well may win the MAC this year. And Toledo gave them everything they thought they would. To keep in mind, Notre Dame had a 27-16 first down edge in the game, and I think you're going to see a better Notre Dame this week. Purdue's dangerous, though. Like what I've seen out of David Bell so far, Jack Plummer at QB hitting 74% with a 6-0 ratio. They did lose Xander Horvath to injury last week, and he won't be able to play here. Probably going to be out for a good 4, 5, 6 games. That's going to hurt their offense. I love to watch him run the football. So I think Notre Dame comes out with the win. I wouldn't lay too many points here, but I like the Irish.
How about Michigan? Wow. I mean, Phil, you and I both thought, I'm looking at Washington going, come on, Washington, what's going on? I actually thought they were going to be much better. Michigan, though, could be for real. They hardly threw the ball in a marquee game like this. They hardly threw the ball at all and just pounded the ball right down Washington's throat. I know this game is I think it's at 27 or something like that, but what are your early thoughts on Michigan? It kind of feels like an old-school Jim Harbaugh team.
Yeah, I've been impressed. I mean, they can run the football well. They're playing much better defense than they did last year. They can get pressure with that front four. Hutchinson, one of the best defensive ends in the country. And I think when they have to throw the football, Cade McNamara has proven very capable of it. Blake Corum has been just dynamic out of the running back spot, averaging 8.1 yards per carry. Now, they are taking on a quarterback this week in Rocky Lombardi, who quarterbacked Michigan State to an upset of them last week. So be a little careful. And Northern Illinois did upset Georgia Tech, and I know they were down big against Wyoming last week, but they actually came back in that one and led 43-42. before Wyoming got the touchdown, the two-point conversion for the cover at the end. So I like Michigan this week. I think we'll learn a lot more about them probably 2 weeks from now when they go travel to Wisconsin. We will find out how good Michigan is. But I think the Wolverines will be 4-0 when they travel to Wisconsin.
All right, let's talk about some big boy football here, Phil. I mean, Yes. Come on. Let's go to the Swamp. 3:30, CBS, number 1 Alabama, number 11 Florida, SEC championship game rematch from last season. The line's 15.5. That's an odd number, right? Like, it's a unique line, I think. I'm sure it'll change. But what do you make on this game? Is there value in taking the Gators in what's going to be a raucous home environment for a guy making his first road start?
Yeah, I think Alabama will be prepared for that, for the home crowd. And, you know, what we've seen out of Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson so far has been great. I mean, Emory Jones, take away the interceptions. He and Richardson can both run the football. They're the top two rushers on the team. Combined, they're hitting 62% of their passes. They've proved very dynamic. But this Alabama defense could be something special. I mean, they've had less than five or less starters returning. Now they've got 8 coming back this year. I think they're really good there. And I know Bryce Young is going to be facing his first hostile crowd, but I think he's going to pass that test. The line's at 15.5 because if you make it 14, everybody in the world's going to bet Alabama. You're trying to make this game even, so give a little more than 14. You're going to get some Florida backers in there because you can easily see an Alabama win by 14. But I got to ride with the Tide. I think that they're coming off a game against Mercer where, you know, it wasn't anything special. But this is a big game for Alabama, and I think they do win this one by over the 2 touchdowns.
I agree with you, Phil. I swear. I feel like college football is healthy right now. There's a lot of teams I feel like that could beat each other. And it just feels
unless
like
you're Southern Cal, Wayne. Unless you're Southern Cal.
No, that's healthy. Southern Cal, I mean, Stanford, like, hey, there was no way that Stanford and David Shaw were going to be down for long. They finally found a QB, it looks like, and McKee, and I thought they looked great. They kind of look like old school Stanford. So we'll talk about that one later. I want to go back to another team that looked unbelievably impressive. They take on Kent State this weekend, and that's Iowa. My gosh. Talk about a dominating performance against a real good Iowa State team.
Love this Iowa team. And, you know, I've said it all year. You go back to last year, they lost by 4. They lost by 1. 2 games they could easily have won. Then they won their next 6 in dominating fashion. And had they played Michigan, had they played Missouri in the bowl, they would have been 8-2. Finished in the top 10, and now they've beaten 2 ranked teams to open up the season. Here's my concern with this game. You're coming off 2 ranked teams as a dog last week and just a slight favorite against Indiana. That's huge emotional effort, and now you're a big favorite at home. You're taking on a potent Kent State team, one that played A&M tough in the first half. They're only down 10-3 at the half in the game. They've got Dustin Crum at quarterback. And do you know Iowa's offense this year has only generated 238 yards per game? They are actually last in the Big Ten in offense. They've got 2 defensive touchdowns against Indiana, basically 2 defensive touchdowns against Iowa State. And now they're laying over 3 touchdowns in this game in a flat spot. I mean, it is a huge flat spot. So I like Iowa to win the game, definitely. But I think Kent State keeps this one closer than expected. So I like the underdog Golden Flashes in this one.
Nice.
Listen, anytime.
Did you write that one down, Steven?
Anytime anytime Phil is backing a MAC team, I take notes, okay? Phil knows the MAC.
It.
All right, that's his backyard. He knows the MAC. Speaking of chunky underdogs, Phil, if I said I'd give you Georgia Tech and 28.5 against Clemson, is that enough Saturday?
The way Clemson dominates the ACC, I don't know. And, you know, you're looking at a Georgia Tech team that last week looked okay at the quarterback spot with Jordan Yates in there. I mean, he threw for 4 touchdowns. First Georgia Tech quarterback, I think, in history to have 4 touchdowns in his first start. But I'd rather have Jeff Sims at quarterback. This is a Georgia Tech team that did lose to Northern Illinois. And Clemson just likes to hammer ACC teams. They're almost an automatic play against the spread. Now, their offense still hasn't overwhelmed me. I mean, 504 yards, 49 points against South Carolina State's not great. But they do have the talent, and I'm not going to go against Clemson in an ACC game. This is one I'll probably stay away from. But if you said you got to play the game, I would take Clemson to win this one probably by about 31.
There is a ton of games with big spreads, but I'm starting to learn, Phil, that those are some of my favorite games to ask you about because you're filling us in on what could happen here. I love it. So I'm going to go to another team that I watched play this weekend that was really fun to watch in a great environment, and that was Arkansas. That Arkansas-Texas game, I mean, Arkansas just absolutely took it to them. And I know they're taking on Georgia Southern. They're ranked, you know, SEC team. I'm curious about what you think about the game, but I'm also curious about what you think about Arkansas's prospects moving forward in the SEC.
I like Arkansas. I don't like their schedule. I like what they did to Texas. They just manhandled them. I mean, at the line of scrimmage, you rush for 333 yards. You shut down the run. K.J. Jefferson did what he had to at the quarterback position. They just manhandled Texas start to finish in that game. Loved it. Now, they've got Texas A&M next week, and this week you got to prep for the option. And the option means cut blocks. Defense linemen don't like that. They don't like to play against cut-blocking teams. And here's the thing with Georgia Southern. They've looked like crap so far. Sorry to use my language here. But they only got past Gardner-Webb by 5, and last week they got blown out by FAU. But their quarterback, Justin Tomlin, suspended the first 2 weeks. Guess what? He's back this week. So now Arkansas, coming off their biggest win in years with A&M on deck, has got to take on the cut blocking of Georgia Southern with their quarterback back. And it's a Georgia Southern team that can shrink the clock. And, you know, let's go back to the opening week. I talked about it last week. They played Rice. Rice led that game 17-7. It's a close game in the fourth quarter. They actually had a first and goal at the 2 and opted to go for the instead of kneeling it with 58 seconds left, they went for the touchdown to win it by 21. I caught a little heat for that, so I don't think he'll do that again. So overall, I like Georgia Southern, plus the 3 touchdowns or more in this one, to keep it a lot closer than expected. I do like Arkansas to win the game, and I'm already anticipating that Arkansas-Texas A&M matchup next week.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Arkansas hasn't been ranked in like 5 years. I mean, this is a big deal for them. So that's a classic letdown spot, Phil. I like it. Speaking of the SEC, Georgia-South Carolina. I mean, the game against UAB for the Dogs was, I mean, that was impressive. I know it was UAB, but listen, UAB's a good team. That's a Conference USA champion, Bill Clark squad. So they're laying 31, Phil, 31 against their rival South Carolina. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and something you said right there, Stephen, was that ranked for the first time in 5 years. I have found, and this is probably about a 65% angle, go against teams that are ranked for the first time in a long time because everybody's patting them on the back. It's all new to them, and go against them. So that's another thing in Georgia Southern's favor for this week's game. But this matchup here, you know, UAB, it seems like Bill Clark just sort of mails it in against the big boys. You take a look at his last 5 games against Power 5 teams, they've got blown out. And while everybody's talking about how great Stetson Bennett was last week, I mean, he only completed 10 passes, 5 of them for like 50-plus yards. UAB basically stacked the line. They got one-on-one matchups and open receivers deep, and he hit them deep and got those touchdowns. Now, if I'm South Carolina this week coming into this game, what am I doing if I'm head coach Shane Beamer? I'm saying, okay, we can't let him beat us deep. So I'm dropping 2 safeties back deep, letting them beat us slowly. And that means that covering a 31-point spread like Georgia's laying here is going to be a lot tougher. And South Carolina's not chopped liver. They've got good talent throughout. The one thing that scares me, Will Muschamp's on the coaching staff of Georgia, might have a little revenge factor built in there. But I don't see the big plays happening that happened last week for Georgia as much against South Carolina. And I think South Carolina keeps this one under the 31-point spread.
You know, it's funny, Phil. I just did my weekly, you know, UCLA show that I do every week, and I was talking about the same thing with UCLA. One of the biggest things they have to deal with in the week off is not listening to everybody. You know, Saban always called it, you know, like rat poison. You know, stay away from that stuff. It's just like stay humble, keep working hard, know that your next opponent can get you. So I love that. I love the way your mind works. A couple teams that are fighting to get back to relevancy, proud programs, 2 ranked teams this week. There's not a lot of those games. Auburn, Penn State, what you got?
You got to like what Auburn's done so far this year, putting up 60 and 62 points a game. But Akron and Alabama State are not Penn State. And Bo Nix, great quarterback at home. I think he's got something like a 20-1 ratio at home. But you put this guy on the road, he's got a 12-12 ratio. And I know SEC crowds are phenomenal. But really, I think maybe the best home field edge of all is a Penn State whiteout. It's just fanatical up there. And these are Penn State fans that couldn't go to games last year, couldn't even have a whiteout last year. You know they're going to be 100% at this game. And so I'm worried about Bo Nix and his what he does on the road. And this is their first road game against a real team. Meanwhile, Penn State's tested. They went into Wisconsin, came out of there with a win. They played the MAC champion, Ball State, who only lost one game last year and just buried them last week, 44-13. They're deep in the backfield. Noah Kane, Kevon Lee, Devon Ford. They've got a game-breaking receiver in Jahan Dotson. They've got a dynamic defense. And Sean Clifford is looking like the Sean Clifford of 2019, not the Sean Clifford of 2020. So coming into the year, I probably had Penn State about a 10-point favorite in this game. I'm going to stick with that. I think they win this. They're only laying 6 here at home with whiteout conditions and Bo Nix questionable on the road. So I like Penn State to win this one with the whiteout at night.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome environment. 7:30 kick for Auburn, Penn State. Kicking off alongside that one, Phil, Virginia, North Carolina, it's in Chapel Hill. I mean, these guys have been playing football for like 400 years or something. I mean, they go way back. But UNC's favored by 9. That feels a little chunky to me, Phil. I mean, Virginia, Bronco Mendenhall, those guys play them tough. What do you think?
Yeah, Virginia dominates North Carolina. They've beaten them 4 straight years, for crying out loud. And even last year, you know, they were an underdog at home and beat them 44-41. And that's with North Carolina making a comeback at the end. I think same thing in 2019 here in Chapel Hill. North Carolina got a late score to pull to 38-31. So Virginia's played great. But if you do follow Virginia, they're a much better team at home. They rarely lose at home. But on the road, they're about a 50-50 proposition. This is a North Carolina team that's playing with legitimate revenge. They're at home for this one. And I think we're going to see them play a lot better. They played better in the second half against Georgia State last week. I'm still a little confused about Illinois' defense. They didn't seem very well prepared for Virginia last week. I love the way Brendan Armstrong is throwing the football. But I think North Carolina is the better team to get them at home with revenge. I like the Tar Heels in a must-win situation. They can't afford to lose here. There would be 2 ACC losses, and you'd be down basically 3 games to Virginia because they'd have 2 games up on you already. So I'm going to go with the Tar Heels and lay the 9 in that one.
Okay, big Pac-12 game for Arizona State. I think it was the Pac-12 South took a little bit of a hit last week with Utah losing to BYU. I thought BYU looked great. I didn't think they looked that good against Arizona. They kind of let a bad Arizona team hang around, but maybe they were looking ahead. Arizona State has a chance to be pretty good this year, but, man, this is going to be a slugfest. 2 tough teams. I don't know, man. Playing at BYU, I've been to that place, Phil. It's a crazy environment, and they have a huge home field advantage.
Yeah, and I like Utah this year. I think they're a better team than Arizona State. And I thought Utah was going to win that game last week. They had won 9 in a row against BYU, for crying out loud. And BYU, you know, they were outplayed a little bit in the first quarter and a half. Stuck around, and then all of a sudden, boom, BYU just took control of the game. Finished with a 21-15 first down edge. I like the way that Algiers running the football. Jaren Hall's looked great at quarterback. He's got 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And Arizona State, as experienced as they are, they have a lot of returning starters. Keep in mind, they have a lot of returning starters from a team that only played 4 games last year. So how experienced is this Arizona State team? I think they're talented. You got to like Rashad White. You got to like train them at the running back spot. And Jaden Daniels is a very dangerous quarterback. But I'm going to lean with BYU, the home underdog in this one. Yep.
Phil, last one for me, buddy, and you know where we're going, okay? Rose Bowl, 10:45 Eastern. Wayne will be stalking the sidelines. He'll be all jacked up on caffeine and God knows what else. UCLA playing a dangerous Fresno State team, Phil. Tell Wayne about how dangerous this Fresno State team is. UCLA laying double digits alpha bye.
Yeah, I tell you what, when I talked to Coach DeBoer going over the team with him this year, got off the phone, I'm like, wow, Fresno's going to win the Mountain West. Then I saw everybody else in the Mountain West was very much improved as well. But I love the way Jake Haener's throwing the football. 74 complete percent completions, 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Ronnie Rivers, one of the most underrated running backs in college football, and their defense allowing 246 yards per game. But if LSU can't go into UCLA and get the win, I don't think Fresno does. However, something Wayne pointed out, UCLA's got some unprecedented success going on. A lot of people slapping them on the back. And here they're laying 13 points in this game. I gotta like Fresno plus the points. I do like UCLA to win the game, but I think it's gonna be like the Oregon game. Remember, Fresno went into Oregon, led that thing 24-21 in the fourth quarter. It was 24-24. Oregon got a fourth down quarterback run for a touchdown to pull out a 7-point win. I think we see the same thing here. I like Fresno plus the points, but Wayne, I think you'll be happy. UCLA goes to 3-0.
So you know what's crazy, Phil, is this Fresno State team has me, you know, watching that Oregon game. I agree with you. I think Hayner's really good. I think this is a solid team. So UCLA's got to show up. They can't get, you know, big heads and get ahead of themselves. You know, can I tie this into one more game? I know we're kind of at the end of our list here, but, you know, that Oregon team struggled with – and shoot, they lost the second and third quarters of that game to Fresno State. Then they go in without – Thibodeau without Flo on defense, and they take it to Ohio State. I know we kind of skipped over the Ohio State-Tulsa game. Is Ohio State in trouble? I think for two straight weeks, you know, defensively, if you listen to Coach Day, I mean, this does not look like one of the better Ohio State teams. It just looks like a team that's really – I know they've played tough opponents, but it's been a rough go at the beginning of the year.
You know, last year they gave up 402 yards per game on defense. So, you know, you go back to last year's games. There was a lot of games where defense was very questionable. Or Indiana, 490 yards. Clemson, 444. Alabama, 621. They didn't have that shutdown defense. Now, you figured with all the talent they have on the defensive line that their defensive line would be back to Ohio State standards. It's not. We saw Oregon running backs just running free in that game, and they couldn't get the contain on the corners. They do have a very young linebacking corps that should get better as the season goes on. But I think the entire Ohio State faithful, very concerned about what that defense has got going on. We thought it was going to be, I think, well, I as an analyst thought it was going to be much like 2019, where they were coming off of 2018 after allowing 403 yards per game. They just had too much talent on the defense to do that. 2019, they bounced back, allowed 260 yards per game. But this year, the defense has been a sieve. I mean, Minnesota ran through them, and if they didn't get their top running back injured, they would have had a potential upset. There are major concerns. Now, they've got Tulsa, Akron, Rutgers to get it settled down and get playing better, get some of those young guys into the lineup, but they need some work there.
Yeah. Phil, don't talk bad about Rutgers football this year, man. That's a good team. Those guys are going to a bowl.
I think they will be this year. I love what I'm watching. And here's the thing with Shiano. They do it with the defense. They do it with special teams. They do it with turnovers. And they do it with a conservative offense. And they get it done. I mean, their defense giving up 260 yards per game so far this year. And they do have some talent. I like the way Noah Vedral, the Nebraska transfer, is throwing the football this year.
Yeah.
Hey, Phil, just one more.
Sure.
When I look at the LSUs of the world and when I look at, like, USC, the USCs of the world, two proud football programs that can recruit with anybody, and they are running an offense where they don't run the ball, it's mind-boggling. It's just it blows me away that they want it with the type of talent they can get. That they're trying to throw the ball 50 times a game. It just, I'm just curious what you think. I mean, I think was the demise of USC. I mean, they're trying to do something that Washington State does. They're stinking USC. You can run the ball there. That's what you're known for. You could still throw it. We know you've got Drake London out there. He'll catch 15 balls a game. But some of these schools are going away from what I think you need to do to be successful.
Yeah, and I think the example was set maybe by Alabama, but Alabama's always been able to also run the football.
Oh, yeah, now, exactly.
USC's running the ball okay this year. They're averaging 5.1 yards per carry, but that Stanford game was just flat out ugly. They got dominated start to finish early on in that. They've always had the tremendous receivers. Look at last year. They had London, St. Brown, Vaughns, McCoy. Yeah. It's like, wow, who do we guard there? So I understand the philosophy of trying to take advantage of those receivers with an outstanding quarterback. But I'm going to agree with you, Wayne. I think you do have to be able to run the football to take some pressure off the defensive line charging after the quarterback.
Right.
Phil, I know you know this, man, but you're the best. Love talking ball with you every week, man. It's awesome.
It's always a lot of fun, guys. Always look forward to my Wednesday mornings with you guys.
Phil, enjoy week three. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, have a good one, guys. Good talking
to you
again.
Thank you, Phil.
There you go.
Yes,
that's our man.
Thank you.
Phil Steele, @PhilSteele042 on the Twitter. He's the best, man. I mean, I love it. This time of the year, these games just start to get, I mean, we ran through like probably a half dozen cases, Wayne, of like teams coming off of big wins. And,
yes.
You know, the letdown factor is real. I think, honestly, man, like UCLA having a bye week after that LSU win is the best thing for you guys. Because Fresno State is dangerous, and you guys, you didn't have to, like, you didn't have to go back out there 7 days later and validate it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I still think you're in trouble Saturday night, though. I do.
The problem is, though, now is that, you know, because I truly believe this. Like, I don't know if you know Tanner McKee's story for Stanford. But he was big time.
Felder loves this guy. Loves him.
He came out when Trevor Lawrence came out, and he was like the number 3 rated drop back quarterback in the nation. And I still don't understand why David Shaw was trying to figure out how to make West work, because he wasn't doing it. And they just made the move. Okay, Tanner McKee's our guy, and it looked like Stanford. Like, if you watch the game, and I know it was late, but if you watch the game, they looked like Stanford. I was already going all offseason. I said, there's no way that a David Shaw team could be bad another year. He's just too good of a coach. I mean, this was a perennial top 10 team for like a decade, and they've kind of fallen off, and they haven't found and they haven't been able to hit at quarterback. And I'm watching this game, and I'm going, this looks like Stanford. And guess who we play right after Fresno State?
Well, here's the cool thing about Stanford, and yeah, that was obviously an axe murdering of Southern Cal, and it literally got Helton gone. But the thing about their schedule was, when you looked at it at the beginning of the year, you're like, ooh, all the contenders in the Pac-12 have to deal with Stanford. Like at some point, like Oregon has to go to Stanford. Washington has to go to Stanford. Utah has to go to Stanford. And yes, the farm is not the most hostile environment in the Pac-12. In fact, it's
Stanford.
Yeah. And
when they're playing their brand of football, they do it differently than most people. It's kind of like talking about taking on like someone that runs the option. Like, now UCLA does it too, but a lot of three tight end sets, extra linemen in the game, you know, it's just unbalanced lines. The way they do play action, the way they throw the ball up to their big receivers. And if you watch that game, it just – they were too much for USC to handle. They just couldn't deal with it. It was just like, we can't deal with this. It was kind of dominating. It was kind of like what Michigan did to Washington. Washington had no answers. Michigan was just like, we're just going to pound it down your throat. It's pretty crazy, man. I tell you, going back to Phil, though, there's so much I respect about him, which is why I ask him so many questions. I just think, and I know that there's a lot more to talk about, but I feel like sometimes we go into seasons and we see names. Like, I don't think Miami's that good this year. I just think they're Miami, whatever. They're Miami, so people want to rank. Oh, they've got a good quarterback. Let's rank them high.
You got Michigan State on Saturday? You think Miami loses Saturday?
No, I'm not saying they're going to lose, but I just don't think they're that good. I mean, I just don't see it. And I see a team like Texas, and everyone's like, oh, they got Sark. I'm like, you guys, any offensive coordinator with Alabama's talent that's worth anything is going to have a great year. He's going to have a career
you
year.
And Serber laughed at me last week on this show. You laughed at me when I told you what Arkansas was going to do to Texas.
No, you're right. And I feel, because I didn't trust Arkansas, because let's be honest, it's been Arkansas. That's why. I hadn't seen enough yet. Now that I've seen it, but I also have pointed out many times that coordinators that play with elite talent tend to look a lot better. Texas just isn't there yet. And so they were manhandled. And so I've watched Notre Dame this year. Notre Dame does not look like – I'm not saying they're not going to get better. It's a long season, but they haven't looked great. But we just automatically assume that since they're Notre Dame, they are. Like, I always say, when we go into these seasons, we have preconceived notions of what we want certain programs to be. And it's just, we haven't seen them play yet. That's why I always think it's funny that, like, you know, I know you're going to brag later about your picks and how you're dominating Cerber and myself. But it's so hard to pick games early in the season because we don't have a clue yet. Because we've seen sometimes that for example, you watch one game and you're like, oh, BYU's not that good. They let Arizona hang around, and then they go and play Utah and take it to them. from week to week, things kind of change. And sometimes the teams we think were bad are not as bad as we think, or there's just so many factors that go into this so that it makes it pretty difficult. But like Penn State, I think they're going to be really good this year. You know why? Because I've seen them play what I think are good teams and they look good.
Well,
I'm questioning Georgia's offense still. I don't know how good their offense is. I don't know.
You know,
we'll find out at some point.
Wayne, do you have like a burglar in your house? I mean, somebody's dogs are going bananas, man. Do you need to go throw them a milk bone or something? Is everybody okay?
My dog Roxy is special. Okay, she likes to bark at everybody. She barks at her own. She barks at her reflection in the mirror. She just barks. She enjoys it. Who's a good girl?
I got one of those too, Wayne.
They're good girls, Cerber, ain't they?
Yes, they are. She's a good girl, and I'll tell you something, Cerber. I gotta tell you this right now. People, last week's show, they all they wanted to talk about was the Shaq was Shaqaroni, and one of my good buddies is like, that Cerber guy needs more time. And I will tell you this too, my pastor Britt at church, he commented on you dropping an F-bomb right in the middle of the show.
Oh man.
Well, you're going to hell, Serbs. Congrats,
going
bro.
Straight to hell.
Anyway.
Can I just say that the Shaqaroni mention from last week's show inspired me, Wayne. After soccer practice on Monday, we have to literally drive past a Papa John's on the way home. And I was like, you know what? Shoot or shoot, baby. And I got a Shaqaroni, and I'm not going to lie. It wasn't bad. I mean, it was good, pretty good. Yeah, dude.
Good.
I mean, there are worse things I've spent $13 on. I'll tell you that much. It did the job. And I've seen you eat, Wayne.
Like, I'll give it a shot.
Bro, you would take one of these things down, man.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Is this a national thing? Can I get it at any Papa John's?
I would think. I mean, I know you guys have, like, don't y'all have, like, restrictions on stuff in California? Like,
oh,
you know, I think it's real cheese. Like, don't you guys do goat cheese or, like, oat cheese or something?
Let's just put it this way. Within the last 24 hours, I downed in one sitting two double doubles with cheese.
Those are In-N-Out burgers.
Destroyed it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, In-N-Out burgers are good. I don't like the sauce they put on them, and the fries are terrible.
It's like Thousand Islands. You know what? I will give you the fries. I will concede on the fries, but it's blasphemous to say that In-N-Out burgers are not good. Come on.
No, they are. They are good. Yeah. Cerber, have you done the In-N-Out? Have you been out west and had one?
No, I haven't, but I will defend it just because one of my favorite movies made such a point to.
Sure.
What's
that? Lebowski, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Dude, yes. Cerber, I'm with you. Until I went out west, like the first time I saw one was in Arizona. I was out there for work, and it was one of those driving along the highway, and you just, I mean, it, as a guy who grew up in the South, I had never seen one before. So, I mean, just across three lanes of traffic, just, you know, yank the steering wheel, pull off to the side of the road. And then, yeah, you're looking at the menu and you're like, okay, so I can get any of these burgers times as many patties and slices of cheese as I want, right? Like, that's what you're saying, Wayne, with the double-double. You can do, like, triple-triple.
I don't order anything extra. The double-double's on the menu.
But the fries, Cerber.
Raw onions, and I'm good.
Cerber, the fries are undercooked, man. They don't leave them in there long enough. Yeah, they're not good.
Great.
They need to hit them with some salt, too, man.
You know what they do? You know what they do is you can smell In-N-Out when you're near it. They pump that aroma into the atmosphere, and it just draws you in.
And yes, they do put Thousand Island on everything, and you got to be like, bro, hold the sauce. That's disgusting. Nobody wants that.
Just stop talking now.
Okay. All right. Very good. But look, I agree. Cerber does need more time on the show. I've been pleading with Cerber to talk more, and we even tried earlier this week. Roddy Jones, Georgia Tech alum, was trying to talk trash to Cerber because it's Clemson, Georgia Tech this weekend, and Cerbs wasn't having it. Let's take a break. Let's come back, and let's get into our pick'em, okay? Because, Wayne, you went 0-3 last week.
Yeah, whatever.
Zero wins.
Who's wrong? The people in Vegas are wrong, okay? I went complete chalk and lost everyone.
Yeah, it's hard to do, man. It's really hard to do. Wayne went 0-3. He will try to redeem himself in some pick'em next.
The biggest schools.
Grabs in traffic, comes down with it. Touchdown.
Touchdown.
Touchdown, Alabama.
Ohio State.
Oregon.
LSU.
LSU.
The biggest moments.
Incomplete. Houston hits the
line. Michigan. Game over.
Touchdown, Gators. How much?
This is the College Football Rewind.
That had to be a great game to watch. I'll tell you, unbelievable.
Download on Sunday mornings on Apple Podcasts. Search College Sports Now.
All right, a new thing that we're doing here on College Sports Now is a midweek pick'em, all right? Just three games, not against the spread, just straight up. Seems pretty simple, right? Like, just pick a team that's going to win on Saturday. And we have not been picking, you know, weak-ass games. We've been bringing the good stuff. Last week it was Oregon, Ohio State, Iowa, Iowa State, and Texas, Arkansas. Wayne Cook found a way to go 0-3 picking games last week.
The people in Vegas let me down. Okay, I went. It's too early to know anything. You guys all act like you're smart. We're supposed to watch games and learn which teams are good and which teams are bad. It usually takes like 3 or 4 weeks to figure it out.
All of us whiffed on Ohio State, who was a, you know, 16-point favorite against Oregon, who didn't have their All-American defensive end. Serber picked Iowa, so he got that one right. And I picked Arkansas. You two, for whatever reason, rode with some dude named Hudson Card, who completed six passes for like 30 yards Saturday.
I have no recollection of that. It's a total blur. I don't know what I was thinking.
I let myself get wrapped up in the Sark, and Texas is playing good.
Yeah, it's you and everybody else, man. Coming
whooped.
Listen, Wayne, you're a teacher. You teach your kids how to read critically, right? You got to read critically on this stuff, man.
Yeah, it was a weak moment. Although, to be honest with you, I'm so used to Arkansas not being good that it's like I hadn't seen them. Now, I watched that entire game and I was like, dang, Arkansas can ball.
You put some respect on the number 20 team in the country. Speaking of Arkansas, Serber has sent me some sound. I'm nervous because I haven't listened to this sound. He said, hey, man, I'm going to send you some Arkansas sound. Need you to play it on the show when we talk about Arkansas. Here it is.
Jefferson's gone all the way at quarterback. Green gets the call. He's got room inside the 25, inside the 20. Green's going to the house.
You ever seen a giant hog up close?
Touchdown, Arkansas. A.J. Green for 30 yards. The Razorbacks are piling it on now.
Yes, sir.
Just so good.
Just a giant.
That's Chuck Barrett and some
right there,
bozo.
Right there, right in your face.
Chuck Barrett, Razorback Sports Network from Learfield. It was an ass whooping, though. It was fun. I'm not gonna lie. It was fun.
They showed everything you were talking about. They showed the car that was pulling the
tusk,
the cage, and the tusk all through the town. I mean, it was kind of fantastic because. You know, that was one of the games I wanted to see. And talk about Arkansas, I guess they were talking about how they haven't had a sellout like that in quite a while. I mean, it was a great atmosphere.
Here's my take on live animal mascots. A real live animal mascot should be so dangerous that it's not allowed on the field. Meet Tusk, okay? Meet Mike the Tiger. Bevo, come on. That thing is so doped up on sedatives.
Yes,
same with
are.
Ralphie. She gets to run one lap, and then she's done. Get out of here. Have you ever seen Ugga? Please. That thing looks like it's going to check out at any moment. All right, let's get into picks, shall we? By the way, for the season, I'm 3-3. Both of you guys are 1-5. Guys, this is a college football podcast. You're 1-5
hey, we're learning.
Games?
Serbs and I are learning, right, Serbs? We're evaluating these teams, and we're learning. We're going to finish strong.
I'm learning that I'm an idiot. Yes.
This is good. So I've got three games, and these are big time matchups. We're not messing around here. Alabama, Florida, Auburn, Penn State, and Arizona State, BYU. We picked a game in pretty much every part of the country. Okay. I'll give you guys a chance to get back in this. I'm going for an upset in the swamp Saturday.
Oh no.
I'm picking Florida.
Oh, my.
No. Wow. See, you're just cocky. You're playing with a couple of wins, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to be dangerous. Why?
I need to see Bryce Young do it on the road. Hostile environment. Gators are going to be alive. And, yes, I know what Alabama's doing on offense and on defense, but I am concerned about Bryce Young. And listen, when he throws
really?
For 700 yards.
Why? You just think because of this environment and he's young and he's...
Man, I think you've forgotten what it's like when the swamp is rocking, dude. I think
no,
you've forgotten.
No, no.
Just
I
like
get
you
it.
Forgot
Trust
about
me.
Fayetteville last week.
I just think the talent discrepancy is there. So like, I'm going to go Roll Tide here. I'm going to go with Alabama. I like Bryce Young.
Roll Tide.
I think he's good enough to I think he's going to show how – I mean, he's just got so much talent. I love the way he moves around. I love his arm talent. He's got talent everywhere around him. And Florida, we'll see. I just
Server?
Don't know if they're there yet.
I don't know about how much talent Bryce Young's got, but I know he's got like $1 million. And Nick Saban.
He's got a big wallet.
So Roll Tide.
Look, man, I mean, Florida gave this team a year ago, and this was, you know, one of the best college football teams ever. They gave him a run in Atlanta for the SEC championship. I think Mullen's going to have a game plan here. Can they execute it? That remains to be seen.
Did you see the video of him scurfing behind the boat? Did you guys see that?
I did. Now, here's my question on that. That came out over the summer. You know, I think he was like, you know, it was part of his recruiting pitch. You know, he wants to come off as a cool guy. He's not wakeboarding. That's like a new thing that people do.
Yeah, behind he's like surfing. He's surfing behind the boat.
Is it so? What do you call it? Scurfing?
That's a thing. Like scurfing. Like basically, you have like a surfboard, and you put your feet just like you're wakeboarding. Even though you don't have the stirrups to put your, you know, you don't put yourself in a boot, but you just put your, you kind of keep the weight on. And once you get up, you use the rope to get you into that wave. That usually you have a boat that has like something that kind of shifts water to one side to where it makes the wave kind of big. And then you get in it, and then you drop the rope, and you're basically surfing behind the boat. I've done it once. It's actually really fun. But he was good at it. He was better than I am.
Have you seen this video, Server?
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it
Scurfing
is.
Surfing sounds heady.
It doesn't look easy, but I've gotten up on a wakeboard.
If you can wakeboard, you can do this.
That's different though, because the boat is giving you.
It's hard to stay in the wave if you're not a surfer, so it takes a little while, but you can do it. I mean,
So both you guys are Rolling Tide on Saturday.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Auburn, Penn State, wideout. Mm. I went first on Alabama, Florida, so Wayne, you can go first here, bud.
Okay. I am going to go with the home team here. I have been impressed with Penn State. They ended last season strong. They're playing really good football right now. Auburn, it'll be interesting to see. Like, Phil was talking to us about, we don't know if Nix is going to play. Is that true?
No, I think the concern with I heard that part too. He said questionable. I think it was more questionable on the road. Like, just not quarterback away from Jordan Hare.
He's playing better. I mean, this is a guy that burst onto the scene. Remember that Oregon game a few years
ago?
Yeah,
I haven't forgiven him for that, yes.
But he hasn't necessarily kind of taken off, and Auburn's just been kind of miring in mediocrity. And so Penn State at home, that crowd is intense. You talked about Florida and what it's going to be like in the swamp. I think that Penn State's crowd is going to be intense, and I think it's going to help Penn State win.
Serbs.
I happen to think Bo might just get it done, and I'm not sure Penn State is all that good, so I'm going to pick Auburn.
Wow, I love it. Right. War damn we'll Eagle, see. Everybody. I'm going to go Penn State. I'm going to go with Wayne.
All right.
Here's the thing, man. We knew this was going to happen with last year and the pandemic season and stuff, but the home environments like Michigan, Washington last week, Michigan's only had, I think, maybe 11 night games in their history. But that place with the yellow and the pom-poms, I mean, it was literally like breathing. I mean, it was pulsating.
Yeah.
It also helped that Washington couldn't pick up first downs, that team. By the way, Washington hosts Arkansas State on Saturday. We didn't ask Phil about this because Washington's 0-2 and, you know, they're done. But the line is 17. Washington is favored over Arkansas State by 17 points. You know how many points total Washington has scored through eight quarters of football this season?
17.
I'm leaning Red Wolves in that one. Oh, just putting that out there. All right, so Serber's going with Auburn. Wayne and I are going Penn State. All right, Serbs, you get to kick us off first here for Arizona State at BYU. Sun Devils are favored by like a field goal on the road. Who you got?
Yeah, it's going to be way more than that. Jaden Daniels is showing out, and he'll continue to show out, and Arizona State will win.
I'm with you.
BYU has not. The Utah win doesn't impress me as much as it probably impresses others, because I don't get the Utah hype and love that they get tossed every year as they ultimately underwhelm down the stretch.
I'm with you. I'm going with Herm.
This is a tough one. Cause
it is. That's why we're picking it.
I've seen Utah up close and personal, and I get it. They have ability to beat you up. And I thought Brewer was going to be a difference maker. I'm still not sure they're utilizing him correctly. Arizona State's a team that I've seen, you know, remember a few years ago when they beat Oregon with Herbert and they had a chance to knock him out. But they also lost 2 years in a row to UCLA when I thought they looked terrible. And Jaden Daniels was totally pedestrian. I like what Coach Satake's doing at BYU. They had such a good year last year. I agree with Phil that BYU and Hall for BYU is actually really good. I like the way he moves. I like the way he throws. I think this one being at BYU is going to be a big deal. So I'm going to go ahead and go with BYU in this one.
Wow. Okay. I love it. No unanimous picks this week. That's because of me picking Florida like an idiot. That probably won't go well. But so there you go. Wayne went 0-3 last week. So please, these are for entertainment purposes only. Okay, don't do anything silly here. These are just idiots throwing darts. So
yeah, really, don't listen to me. True. Whatever you do.
But hey, I mean, it is the Wednesday pick'em, and we're gonna ride with it all year. Okay, that's how we roll, folks. That's the show. Wayne, have fun Saturday night, buddy. I am, when we brought it up with Phil, I am slightly concerned because, Ronnie Rivers and Fresno State are, they're not slouches.
Don't
so.
Be. UCLA with Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Zach Charbonnet, Britton Brown, okay, and this offensive line that is dominating, not to mention an attack defense with people like Mitchell Agudé and Caleb Johnson, are going to just be in your business the whole game. And I think the leadership of this team is going to come ready to play, and they're going to play hard, and they're not going to overlook anybody. Trust me, they've been watching that Oregon-Fresno State film, so I think they know what they're up against. The fact that they get to open the season with three straight home games matters quite a bit.
Sure.
So I think it'll be a great game. So I'm looking forward to it, you guys, man. We're going to learn a lot more this weekend. Some great games. Can I tell you guys something real quick? I know you guys are ready to end it, but I did want to bring this up. The Tennessee versus Pitt game, were you guys aware that they were honoring someone during this game? Great coach, Johnny Majors. Did you guys hear anything about this?
Yes, he coached both of these schools, yes.
So Tennessee and Pitt, it was a really good game, actually. Johnny Majors, I was lucky enough to play for him in the Blue-Gray game way back in 1994. And I remember sitting on a bus with him on the way. I forget it was on the way to practice, so it was on the way to the game. And we had a great conversation. And I was, blown away with how impressive he was. I'm not name dropping or anything, or I guess I am, but I just thought it was kind of cool that they honored him last week. And I just remembered he had this presence that all great coaches have. There's just something about him. A couple weeks ago, I was at the LSU game, and I didn't even realize this, but John Robinson, great USC coach, Rams coach, was on the coaching staff for LSU. And I had a chance to talk to him on the sidelines, and he's, pretty been around for a long time. So I was just happy to see him out there, and another great guy. Some of these legends that are still around are some of the ones that we've lost. I hope that the college football world appreciates what they did to grow this game and to turn it into what it is now, because it's pretty darn amazing, and we're all lucky to cover it.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
There we go.
You ever come across anything like time travel? Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
See, did I tell you I played in an all-star game?
I was on a billboard once.
You know Johnny Majors? Yeah, he was my all-star coach back in the day.
It's back when best friends with you.
It's back when coaches wore jackets and ties. I mean, just
I love being
era,
around man. Like excellence, you guys. I love it. When you're around amazing, great people, and I'm telling you, there's a lot of people like that out there. It's just, you guys know this. I mean, I know you guys, when you're working, you're dealing, get to be around, you know, Steven, when you get to interview Coach Saban or talk to some of the coaches in the SEC, it's just, you can feel it. You can kind of almost like feel their excellence and just how good they are. It's fun.
Real quick on that, Serber, you got to be at SEC Media Days for the first time. Did you notice how tight everybody got when it was Saban Day? Was that, did you pick up on that at all?
Oh, totally picked up on it. Also, only really felt the magic when he was in the room when compared to everybody else. It felt different than, like, all those guys were awesome, but when he was in the room, it was totally different. Totally different.
Did he, like, put his hand up and, like, make you almost, like, choke to death with the force?
No, it's the opposite. It's how absolutely relaxed, at ease, and in his element he was.
That's a nice way of saying disinterested, though. I mean, like, he answers your question. He's polite, but I mean, he is not, like, he's not intense about any of it. You see what I mean? Like there are other coaches that are locked into every answer, every question, like eye contact, all that stuff. Saban is smoothing out the table linens. Like, he's,
but
like,
his press conferences are gold, you guys.
Well,
don't you think?
That's different. That's different than what we got.
The big difference is, while those other guys might be like super focused in on every little question and every little aspect of how, like, they're not just good at it like he is. He's just good at things. At everything he does, he's just really good.
He's got nice teeth, too. You ever notice that?
Oh, wow. No.
Yeah.
But can he scurf? Can he get behind a boat and get on a... I mean, it's important.
No, but I'd rather win natties than be able to scurf at, you know, in Lake Burton, okay?
I don't even know if that's what it's really called. I'm just saying that.
I typed it in and something else came up. But, Wayne, you're the...
You're on the work computer?
I don't know what it's called. It's surfing behind the boat. I'm not really sure.
Wayne, you're the boat guy. So, I mean, if you call it
my
scurfing...
My boat's not good. I can't make the wave like that. You have to have a special kind of boat to do that.
You got a pontoon boat?
We just wakeboard.
You got one of those party boats, one of those pontoons?
No, we got like an 18-foot inboard, outboard, four winds. It does the job, buddy.
I don't even know what that means.
Tubers and wakeboarders and jumping off cliffs for the last 20 years.
You got speakers on
that
thing?
Same boat.
You got speakers on that thing? You got Bluetooth?
You know what? You know what's really funny is we bring the speakers and the Bluetooth now because the boat, a couple years ago, the boat's radio just kind of went on the fritz, and I haven't replaced it yet.
Nice. Okay.
We just bring it with us.
By the way, if you want to follow Wayne on Twitter, tremendous follow. I mean,
it's
the
been
guys,
a good week
the,
for me on
the
Twitter.
Guy's just giving you content. At Wayne Cook, UCLA on Twitter. You can follow Serber. He's the biggest Twitter rock star out of all of us. At @L_Serberino. Why can't I pronounce your Twitter handle?
Do it right, man. Come on. It's not like it's not English or something.
Clean me up in post. Dictionary. I'm sorry I'm so sloppy today.
I didn't do that. @L_Serberino. I'm tired.
You can follow me on Twitter @StephenHartzell. Yeah, I'm tired too, man. I'm going to go get a Shaq-tironi. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
God, you think they're delivering right now?
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.